Hello, it's Friday 29th of May. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
Today we're dedicating the entire show to Southeast Asia's most talked about destination, Vietnam.
Yep, the hottest question in Asian travel right now is when will Vietnam reopen to international tourism? So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, everyone is talking about Vietnam. It's all over the travel sphere, making headlines on TV news, trending across social media. Domestic flights and tourism restarted earlier in May, but what we all want to know is when will Vietnam open to international travel?
Yeah, and the primary reason for this fevered speculation is Vietnam's success in testing, tracing, and containing the coronavirus. As of yesterday, Vietnam has officially recorded just 327 cases of COVID-19 and no deaths at all. Moreover, it's on a 42 consecutive day streak without recording a single community transmission. The only recent cases were Vietnamese nationals returning from overseas. So when you put that in a global context, or even compare it to the troubles of Southeast Asian countries like Indonesia or the Philippines, which are reporting way more than 327 cases per day, it is simply remarkable.
It really is. And, you know, the spotlight is truly turned onto Vietnam, travel and tourism sector now. For one, because everybody wants to see, you know, what is happening, what's going to happen to their country post-COVID. So they're kind of using it as a test case. But, you know, as we're seeing across Asia and worldwide, reopening borders after a lockdown is really tricky. You know, you'd be going from essentially a COVID-safe nation to an entirely unknown COVID future.
Very true. The route out of lockdown is a much, much tougher path to plot than the route into lockdown. As we've said on the pod before, Hannah, driving down the infection rate is one thing, but keeping it at a very low level is entirely another. And when you add domestic travel, which is already happening in Vietnam, and then you overlay that with inbound and outbound travel into the equation, the risks do multiply.
They do. So before we start discussing the challenges and opportunities for Vietnam's tourism sector, let's do what we usually do first, and that's take a few steps back.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So it's important to point out that while Vietnam is emerging in mid-2020 as a hot tourism destination after the pandemic, before the pandemic, it was becoming one of Asia's brightest success stories, particularly in volume tourism terms, which is how destinations tend to be assessed these days. So if we look back at last year, Vietnam surpassed 18 million arrivals for the first time, and some 14.4 million of those arrived by air. China was by far the largest inbound market with 5.8 million arrivals last year, followed by South Korea with 4.2 million arrivals. Those were the only two markets to contribute more than 1 million arrivals. The next top markets were Japan, Taiwan, and the US. And although it was a little down on the list of arrivals, India was emerging as one of the markets to watch with a high potential growth. And another factor to throw in there is that 79% of the visitors to Vietnam last year were from Asian countries. So almost 8 out of 10.
That's good. And that probably also stands them in good stead post-pandemic as well, doesn't it? For when, you know, if long haul is going to take longer to recover, at least they can rely on those Asian markets to buoy up their numbers. Vietnam's 18 million arrivals in 2019 was up about 16% on 2018. And that shows how growth expectations were rising. So back in 2009, Vietnam set a target of 4.5 million arrivals in 2010. It surpassed that 15 million benchmark in 2018. And in January this year, I mean, obviously this was pre-pandemic, the government said it planned to achieve 35 million inbound and 120 million domestic travellers by 2025.
Yeah, and so it has a very strong tourism sector, Hannah, and some of these factors are being buoyed by the strong economic momentum of Vietnam. So the World Bank, for example, said that last year, economic growth was one of the highest rates in Asia. I think it was 7% GDP growth last year. And even giving for what's happened this year, you know, the economy was locked down for a couple of months, the World Bank is still predicting 4.9% GDP growth for Vietnam, which is quite astonishing. There are other factors as well. If you look at the size of the population, it's growing very, very fast, but it's very, very young. I think 70% of Vietnam's population is under 35 years old. And the middle class is growing extremely fast. It currently accounts for approximately 13% of the population. But that is expected to double to 26% by 2026. That's in just 6 years' time.
So, I mean, with that, it comes disposable income, doesn't it? And the ability to be able to spend and go traveling, basically.
Yeah, it does. And it means that the market is very interesting because it obviously is a very prime inbound market, but it has a very strong domestic tourism market and obviously a fast growing outbound market as well. So it has all these three factors pulling together, which, you know, would ordinarily in a normal year boost the economy. But obviously the COVID factor means that we've had a very disrupted first part of the year. But you do get the sense that Vietnam feels that there is opportunities to grow pretty quickly and rebound very fast once all the lockdowns are lifted.
Yeah, I mean, and even if there've been some surveys recently, and I can't remember the exact figures, but Vietnamese in general in Southeast Asia, I think, are some of the most confident in their belief that the economy will rebound over COVID-19. So, I mean, that's going to help them as well, because a lot of all of this and travel post COVID-19 is about confidence, isn't it? So if you have confidence that the government is handling things well, and that you believe the economy is going to recover, well, it's probably a self-fulfilling prophecy, really, to a certain extent.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, one of the surveys, recent survey, I think it was this week, was by WebIn Travel. And they surveyed countries around the region in terms of how consumers feel about traveling domestically to begin with, because we know that the recovery is going to be primarily domestic for the foreseeable future. So of those surveyed, 25% of Vietnamese plan to travel domestically in the next 3 to 6 months. So that's quite a high percentage. But there were higher percentages. The Philippines was 30%, 29% in Indonesia. Malaysia was slightly lower, 23%, and then 21% in Singapore. So when you look at those factors, you know, across our region, people do want to get traveling again. It may be for the foreseeable future that they have to remain within their own borders. But if there are opportunities to travel and countries do open their borders, even on a selective basis, you know, we may start to see some movements maybe from July, August onwards.
Yeah, I mean, we were saying, before about domestic market, you know, by 2025, Vietnam was planning to have 120 million domestic travellers. So there is already quite a strong domestic travel market, and that stands them in pretty good stead for recovery, doesn't it?
It does. And one of the interesting factors for the domestic market, as well as for the inbound market, is just that it's the sort of size and the sort of extraordinary shape of the country as well. It's a very long, elongated country with like a high sort of point in the north, and then Hanoi, the capital, is in the north. Ho Chi Minh City is right down in the south. But a lot of the attractions are sort of patterned all the way up the coast through the country. And it has quite a diversity of sort of coastal attractions, inland highlands as well, interesting cities. There's a lot of rich history. The culinary scene is obviously very, very big. So, you know, for the chance for domestic tourists to explore parts that they probably wouldn't have seen, because it is quite a long country. You know, they will be there for now, and at the moment they'll have the place to themselves.
Yeah, they will. It'd be a different experience, I imagine, without all of the international travellers there.
So you can see what's going to happen there, with more and more Vietnamese travelling in their own country, probably to places they haven't seen before. You know, the cameras are going to come out, aren't they? And so we're going to see a lot more imagery across social media that perhaps, you know, we as travellers might not have seen some of these places before. So that's going to generate its own interest for the inbound market when it eventually comes back.
Absolutely. I mean, and even if we were talking about outbound, the outbound market, and obviously there's no outbound market right now and the borders are closed. But, you know, last year, Vietnamese travellers were really starting to become a market to watch. Like you were saying, they're a big market, growing middle class, growing young population as well. And the numbers of Vietnamese travellers travelling to destinations like Japan, Korea, Australia, even Europe, were starting to increase. Now, the only thing that really hampered that, I would say, is visa access. And I think Vietnamese still face quite a lot of difficulty when it came to procuring visas, particularly for your areas, you know, like Schengen visas, British visas, US visas, all pretty difficult for them to get hold of. And that in itself is, you know, a deterrent from traveling to those countries. But still, you know, travelers were still doing that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. We mentioned this on the pod before, didn't we, Hannah, that, you know, airlines like Vietjet and even Vietnam Airlines, they were really starting to push the envelope, open up new routes, get people traveling. But obviously that visa issue was a concern. But you do get the feeling that Vietnam has a lot of cards to play here. As one of Asia's first countries to reopen, you know, there could be a reset button being done here. And it may actually be doing deals with other countries now to actually make access a little bit easier, because all countries are going to want tourists from wherever they can find them once they're actually open. And Vietnam being, you know, that classic case of a COVID-safe country, you know, you'd probably want Vietnam travelers probably beyond any other country coming to your destination right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So in mind, like you say, open up doors to them to countries that perhaps previously it was a little bit more difficult to travel to, just simply because they know that these travelers will still spend money and they're COVID-free. So it's the perfect combination.
Yeah, and another thing about the outbound market, Hannah, you posted a piece on social media, I think it was a couple of days ago, about Vietnam Airlines, and they're looking at buying some airplanes, which is sort of unheard of right now.
Yeah, so the boss of the airline is actually contemplating taking an order of 50 new planes, and that's worth, I think, $1 billion, more than that, dollars. And just the thought of doing that, I mean, I think they're one of the few airlines in the world who are actually thinking of expanding their fleet right now. But they see that opportunity, and it's perhaps not only the opportunity, but they're also very fearful because the aviation market in Vietnam is becoming so cutthroat and so opportunistic. You know, you've got lots of new airlines, you've got like Bamboo Airlines, for example, who are coming up, that VNA feel that they really have to act now. They have to get ahead of the game. So they're thinking of doing that. They're thinking of opening up routes to Hangzhou in China, they announced not too long ago. So I think they're going to be a pretty aggressive in terms of opening up new routes and taking those chances. And I mean, I guess as they're being state-backed, perhaps they have more flexibility to take those chances than an airline that's privately owned.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's another factor also that we should probably consider. I mean, we've talked here about the strong market, the growing fundamentals in the economy, a young, vibrant population. People love to travel. But there's also the political factor. And I know I always keep saying this, but actually in Vietnam, there's an even stronger political factor this year than perhaps in some other countries, because the cycle of the government is actually starting to change. So I think it's next January. The key positions of the general secretary of the party, the president, the prime minister, these positions will change in January. So there's a lot of jockeying for position, and there's a lot of impetus to get things done. So you can just see that there's some wheels starting to move. Come on, let's get these things moving to actually generate the economy and kickstart all aspects of it to get it moving very quickly by the time that next January comes around.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest story, of course, I guess, that we are all wondering for Vietnam is really, when is it going to open up to tourism? You know, okay, they've opened it up to domestic, people are allowed to travel around, that seems to be going pretty well. There are reports from airlines that load factor is quite high, you know, some routes 80 to 90%, which is really good for an airline. So are they going to risk it, you know, risk that COVID-19 free status and open up to tourists? Who will they open up to? When will they open up to? That's the question.
This is the really interesting thing at the moment, isn't it? If we go back a month, we were looking at the progress in Asia in terms of the way that a lot of our countries had actually managed to contain or suppress the virus, and it was quite strong. You looked at Europe, and there was a completely different case there. You look at the US, even worse case. But you look at the rates of reopening, and you know Europe is opening up much more quickly, and there's a reason for that. Europe has its summer season coming up, and the economies really need that spending. But Asia is very, very reticent. We're not really seeing a first mover. Even countries like Australia and New Zealand that floated this idea of a travel bubble. Now, there is some movement there, but I guess there's a lot of negotiation going on. It hasn't actually happened yet. And you look at Southeast Asia and you also look at China, and you do get the sense that countries are a bit wary of being the first mover, just in case there's not much of a response, there's not much demand, or even worse, that something bad happens and you start to get an increased infection rate.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been interesting to see what the tourism board has been coming out with. So Kien Tran Trong, who's the chairman of the Vietnam Tourism Advisory Board, he actually commented in an article in Travel Weekly in the UK on the 15th of May, so mid-May. And one of the quotes that we liked, he said, from June the 1st, the number of daily domestic flights will be almost 80% of pre-COVID-19 levels, especially between the key cities of Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh. And more interestingly, he also says, we will probably first open air routes to countries and regions which are in a similar situation to us. there have been welcoming discussions on travel bubbles between countries, and as one of the most successful countries containing the disease, we are actively engaging with those countries. So who could those countries be, Gary? Who do you reckon?
Well, that's good. And I think there's 2 points to pull out of those quotes. I think the one regarding the second quote, where he says, you know, there have been discussions and there's some of the successful countries that have handled the disease. You know, one of the reasons we're probably not seeing much movement, there's probably a lot of negotiation going on. A lot of different countries are trying to get into the play here. So there's probably a lot of sort of back channeling going on. Going back to the first point he said about, you know, domestic daily flights will be almost 80% of pre-COVID levels by June the 1st. Now, that was obviously a target that they've set and they're going to try and reach that. I sat in on a webinar earlier this week by OAG, which was looking at the future of booking levels on across the world on airlines. And I think over the last week, the number of the extra capacity that Vietnamese airlines had put in place for domestic airlines, obviously, was the highest regrowth rate in Asia. It was even higher than China. So, you know, they are moving quite fast on the domestic flight level to try and generate business travel and leisure travel amongst Vietnamese consumers. But, you know, as you said, that all important who's going to come and when. Yeah, I mean, countries don't want to say it, and we don't want to say it, Hannah, because we're being a bit reticent. So, okay, so you're going to ask me which countries will open first. Well, I mean, they are giving away some clues there, aren't they? They're saying the countries with that have successfully contained the disease. Well, you would look at Korea. Korea was the second biggest inbound market to Vietnam last year. China's the biggest market. So those are the two that they're going to definitely want back. I think between those two, that accounted for, I think, more than 10 million visitors last year. So those are going to be the primary countries that they're going to want back. Within Southeast Asia, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? Because some of the biggest markets, we don't yet know when the lockdowns and the travel bans are going to be come back into force. So that has a knock-on effect. You know, consumers aren't going to be booking anything yet until they know they can actually travel. There's a conundrum there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, do you announce that you're going to open in a couple of months' time and then hope that people will have booked by then, or maybe people wait till you actually open? Or do we think,
Hannah, that perhaps there is some sort of ASEAN, Southeast Asian nations thing going on here where maybe several markets will open at the same time?
I mean, I think there will definitely be some kind of ASEAN travel bubble, but the problem still is that all the countries are at such different levels. I mean, they are all talking at the moment about lifting different lockdowns. So I think Manila is going to go down to their general enhanced community quarantine from June the 1st. I think Jakarta is due to lift some things by June the 1st too. Singapore by June the 1st are easing things, but the numbers are still quite high in these countries. They're nowhere near yet being a COVID-free nation. And I think until Southeast Asian countries are on that same kind of level, it's going to be very hard to just open them all up to one another, aren't they? I think countries are going to feel very cautious about doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can sit on the fence or we can make bold predictions, but it does seem increasingly likely that June is going to be a critical month here. I mean, it's coming to the point where economies really do need to start opening up. I mean, we saw this week that Singapore is starting to consider accelerating the route out of its circuit breaker simply because the economy is suffering so much. We also saw that Singapore Changi has announced that from, I think it's June the 1st, that it will start to allow some degree of connective air traffic. So there is some movement there. You know, Vietnam has floated this idea that from July the 1st, it will start to allow applications for e-visas from 80 different countries. Mm. So that's July. So you're starting to see the pieces of the jigsaw coming together, but you're also wondering at the moment, as you said there, Hannah, you know, we have such different COVID rates. We have such different governmental approaches to coming out of lockdown. At the moment, it's very uncertain. And consumers, obviously, are just taking steps back from that and saying, well, there's just no point us even looking at booking until, A, we know what we can do, when we can travel, where we can go. And also, what's the pricing structure going to be? We don't know what the capacities are going to be. I mean, we got used to, Hannah, living in Malaysia over the last, you know, particularly the last 4 or 5 years. Now, the frequencies each day of flights to some of the places we want to go to, you could pick and choose when you wanted to go throughout the day. Is that going to happen? I mean, earlier this week, Thai Air Asia announced that it may be in talks to merge with another airline. So if that happens, you know, will we see a big drop in their capacities? We don't know what will happen here in Malaysia. But there are a lot of factors that are in this mix at the moment. It's not just about when travel bans are opened up. what visa operations are. You know, there's other issues. What's the airport conditions? Are there going to be standardized airport sanitary and hygiene and testing conditions in ASEAN? You would think that there should be, really. I mean, there is an ASEAN economic community here, which started at the beginning of 2016. You would think that the major airports, at least, would have standardized procedures going forward. But we don't have any information on that right now. And I think this lack of clarity on the way forward is going to affect consumers for a period to come. And you know, I have a feeling, particularly here in Malaysia, you know, as soon as we're allowed to travel domestically, I think there will be quite a rush to do so. Traveling over borders at the moment, we don't know. We just don't know, do we?
No. I mean, and it's interesting in Vietnam as well, because they don't really have so many social distancing measures when it comes to planes anymore. So they even, you know, a lot of airlines are flying with no passengers in the middle seats. But Vietnam actually don't impose that anymore. They did for a brief period and then have taken away that restriction. I guess so that the airfares can be as competitive as possible. But then if you're talking about international flights, then how is that going to work? Are they going to, again, have to impose this rule about not having a middle seat? Again, will fares be more expensive as a result of that? Or will consumers still feel a bit they don't want to take that risk on an international flight with potentially lots of other passengers from destinations that are not COVID-free or not as COVID-free as Vietnam?
Absolutely. And as just going back to the point that you mentioned there earlier, Hannah, about, you know, which markets will come back quickest, and we are presuming that it will be Southeast Asian markets, it will be Northeast Asian markets. You know, those that will be, they will probably be the test cases to begin with. But, you know, countries like Vietnam, they do actually attract quite big arrivals numbers from some of the key European markets. And we're moving into the European summer season. So you just wonder whether, you know, maybe Frankfurt might be one of the destinations that they allow flights in from. Just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, Bamboo Airways was about to launch its inaugural route to the Czech Republic, I think, earlier this year, which they had to postpone. Maybe they would just pick a random destination like that, you know, that they've got the flight links that they will open up to. But, you know, my gut does tell me it will be Southeast Asia, it will be Northeast Asia. And even the minister or the director of the Vietnam National Administration of Tourism, so VNAT, even said that Southeast Asia and Northeast Asia will be the first markets to be targeted. And they said in the fourth quarter. So it could still be quite a way off yet. You know, we're only in Q2 still, aren't we, towards the end of Q2.
If it gets pushed back that far, Hannah, I mean, do you think that Vietnam might be included in Australia's travel bubble?
Well, there's a possibility, isn't it? But I suppose that they will have to choose, right? Because it will probably be something like, okay, you could be included in Australia and New Zealand's travel bubble, or you could be in ASEAN. But if ASEAN is not included in Australia and New Zealand's travel bubble, then do you see what I mean? Then there's then the potential for travellers to come in from ASEAN into Vietnam and from Vietnam on to Australia.
Yeah, that's a good point, because again, one of the things that we've said over and over again in recent pods is we do expect this reopening to be phased. You know, not all markets are going to open straight away, and because you wouldn't want that for a number of reasons. It's going to cause too much congestion at airports for a start, but you just don't want huge amounts of tourists coming in all at once. You know, I know everybody likes volume targets. Everybody wants spending back in their economies, but it does look like there'll be a phased way back into sort of the tourism normal of whatever that's going to be in future. So one of the things we haven't quite touched on in any degree, Hannah, is this e-visa policy, which, you know, has been announced, and we know that the applications are going to start from July the 1st, but we know that there are 80 countries that are going to be involved in that, but we don't yet know how that's actually going to work on the ground. I think I read that it would be $25 for an e-visa, and that it would take 3 days to process. Have you heard any more about that?
No, well, I mean, I think I've heard about as much as you in that it's quite new. And I guess what people feel a little bit confused about is, you know, why are they making this announcement now before they're actually announcing that when or who will be able to travel? But it's quite a smart play, really. So 80 countries, it's quite a big deal that they're going to allow for entry. You know, Vietnam has always, it's always been slightly confusing in terms of visas and where do you get the e-visas and how do you apply for that. And there have always been a lot of dodgy kind of agents out there who you could apply for. And, you know, making it simplified, I think, makes sense. But it is, you know, slightly strange timing. I mean, one of the reasons they said why they've done this is because the existing scheme is set to, the existing pilot scheme is set to expire on the 30th of June. So they need to announce that they've got something. But still, I mean, when all international travel is kind of closed anyway, and the borders are closed, it does seem a little bit of an odd decision to announce it, unless it's just getting people excited.
I think there's part of both things there. I think you're absolutely right. In terms of this, what they had in terms of e-visas before was a pilot process, and that is due to expire. But from what I understand is they actually have to write this into law in terms of what will happen with the e-visa strategy for the country going forward. So this has to be written in law. So they'll actually enshrine that 80 countries will be legally able to get the visa. But that doesn't mean that they're going to all be issued from day one. And as we said, it doesn't mean that they're going to be issued at all, because we don't yet know when flights are going to start. But I just have a feeling that that 1 July date gives us a little bit of a hint as to when there might be some phased reopening. We're probably looking at July or maybe August, certainly not before that, because it wouldn't be possible if you can't get a visa. But, you know, maybe announcing the visas gets things moving a little bit while they work on things like the airport systems, the hygiene, the testing and that kind of stuff. I mean, Vietnam has been quite rigorous on its testing, so it shouldn't be too difficult for it to get that in place if the number of international flights are relatively limited in the early period. They're not going to allow all flights in from everywhere to begin with, because it just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will be, you know, selected destinations, limited number of flights per day, limited number of packs that they can handle, just to make sure that it's smooth, at least at the beginning. And then as, you know, they become more confident and processes become more refined, then they can start ramping that up.
Yeah. And so on that e-visa idea, Hannah, you actually put a question out to some of our listeners and followers on LinkedIn, didn't you? And we got a bit of feedback.
Yeah. So I asked them, what country or countries do you think travellers will return fastest to Vietnam? So, I mean, people, you know, some of them were a little bit on the fence, but we, you know, some people gave some good answers. So Luis Riestra, who is opening rebranding manager for corporate social responsibility in Accor Hotels in Korea, said Korea, no doubt. not got any interest in that, has he? But announcing e-visa resumption and no entry date, when in fact the number one most important item to declare in Vietnam e-visa application is intended date of entry, amounts to no news. Well, what good is an e-visa with no entry? Both news need to be released in tandem, i.e. visa applications reopen July 1st, entry September the 1st. Yeah, you got a point there, Luis.
100% agree with that. And that's basically what we've been trying to argue here as well. And so Akash Magu, who's a senior travel consultant at Enchanting Travels in Bengaluru in India, he's a bit like us as well. He says, I think countries that have recorded the low number of cases and can project themselves as safe places to travel will get a lot of travellers, but he doesn't say where from.
Mm. So Oliver Woods, who's a strategic director at Red Squared in Vietnam, said, this is a great move and I applaud the Vietnamese government's progressive approach to visas, including business visas for foreigners, where it leads the region in sensible immigration policy. However, I do hope e-visas are eventually converted into true blue visas on arrival, i.e. don't require pre-registration, which I think will drive up tourism even further.
Yeah, and Albert Sanchez Ramos, who's a travel specialist on the Spanish and Latin American market, sums this up quite nicely. He says, all of these news are just speculation. Vietnam is not opening borders to tourism yet, and I don't think they will do so until it is 100% secure. If they have been one of the best countries to prevent faster and more effective the epidemic from spreading, why would they now be the first ones to open? All news related to special cases, and that's all.
Yeah, it's true. So that brings us almost to the end of this special Vietnam edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Yeah, and with Vietnam being such a red hot topic in the travel sphere, we'd love to hear your comments and your feedback on this episode, on anything that we've said or anything that our guests have said as well. So please send us a note by email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or on our Facebook page, The SEA Travel Show, or on Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
And look out for our daily travel and tourism updates on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Reader numbers are rising quietly on that, which is great. And of course, you can listen to all of our previous podcast episodes on our website, theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Yeah, and don't forget to sign up for our weekly mini briefing e-newsletter. Mailed out each Friday afternoon, the mini briefing takes a close-up look at the unfolding travel situation in one Southeast Asian country per week or a popular destination for Southeast Asian travelers. So far, we've covered the Philippines, Singapore, Indonesia, Myanmar, Malaysia, and South Korea.
Yep, and today it's, surprise, surprise, Vietnam. So please do sign up to receive that one. Or if you listen to this after Friday, just private message us and we'll send it on to you.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's podcast. We're both off to start applying for our Vietnam e-visas. So we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism with you again very soon.
Bye.